Well, good morning again, everybody. It is great to see so many of you here today on Easter Sunday. And if you're not a religious person or a church person and someone dragged you here, if you haven't been to church in a long time, we are especially happy that you are with us today. In case you don't know, today is Easter Sunday. It's kind of a big day for us. Today is a day where around the world, Christians confidently proclaim the victory of Christ over sin and death. Today is a day where churches everywhere announce the good news that Jesus rose from the dead. But today I want to talk with you about maybe something that disturbs you from time to time. Maybe something that you're ashamed of. A troubling thought that won't go away. A nagging feeling that you just can't shake. What if it's not true? What if it's all just a nice story that we tell each other year after year? Today I want to talk with you about what happens when faith meets an unwelcome stranger called doubt. I think we would all love to believe with unbridled faith. And maybe some of you, maybe a lot of you, grew up being told to put aside your doubts, stop asking questions, and just believe. But the truth is that we all have doubts from time to time, including some of the most committed Christians, including priests. For example, just recently, the journals and diaries of and papers of Mother Teresa were released. And what we discovered is that this great woman of faith, for long periods of her life, struggled with doubt. Doubt is a part of faith. And the central premise that I want to convey to you today is that doubt is not the enemy of faith. Doubt is natural. Doubt can even be good sometimes. And you may have doubts, and God is not upset with you for having doubts. And so over the next 3-4 weeks, we're going to be talking about how to reconcile faith and doubt in our new Easter message series that we're calling Without a Doubt. We're going to be talking about how it's rational, how it's okay to have faith even in the presence of doubt. Take a look at this. What I think a lot of people don't actually realize is that the Easter stories in the Bible are filled with doubt and doubters, and today's story is no different. On the Sunday morning after Jesus was crucified, one of his disciples made a shocking discovery. Mary Magdala came to the tomb early in the morning, while it was still dark, and saw the stone removed from the tomb. The gospel writer, John, he says that she came while it was dark. He wants to set the scene in darkness because he wants to describe where Mary is in her faith. Her spiritual leader has just died, and she thinks it's all over. So she ran, and she went to Simon Peter and to the other disciple whom Jesus loved and told them, "They've taken the Lord from the tomb. He's gone. We don't know where they've taken him or put him." You see, Mary did not believe. yet. She doubted. She assumed someone had broken into Jesus' tomb and stolen the body. So Peter and the other disciple, it's John. He doesn't call himself John because he's writing the gospel, but it's Peter and John. And they run to the tomb. And John runs faster than Peter. Peter's older, I guess. And but John waited and allowed Peter to look into the tomb first. And when Peter got inside the tomb, he found very valuable burial cloths there that would have been used to cover the corpse. And he also found a cloth that covered Jesus' head. It was rolled up neatly in a separate place. This is something grave robbers would never leave behind, because they were valuable in those days. Then the other disciple, John, went into the tomb. And notice this, it says, he saw and he believed. But did he? Did he really? Because the Greek verb for believed there in that sentence can also mean began to believe. And when you put that together with the last verse of the story, it makes sense. Because look at the last verse. It says, they did not yet understand the scripture that Jesus had to rise from the dead. You see, Peter and John had doubt. But they also had faith. Being seen at the empty tomb could have been disastrous. Guards had been stationed there to prevent the disciples of Jesus from stealing the body and then claiming that he had risen from the dead. And so, if Peter and John were caught at the tomb, they would have been accused of breaking into the tomb, charged with stealing the body, and most likely crucified, just like Jesus. Peter and John could have stayed home and wallowed in doubt. They could have made the rational choice to protect themselves. But despite their doubt and confusion, despite the risk, they chose faith and they went to the tomb. Faith and doubt, they work hand in hand. You know, if you were to ask me why I believe, I could point to a number of philosophical arguments over the millennia for the existence of God. I could maybe show you some of the recent scientific discoveries that have been made that really strongly suggest that belief in God is more rational than not. I can even tell you that most people today, surveys find, still believe in a higher power, the vast majority of people. But I probably wouldn't tell you all that if you asked me why I believe. I would probably tell you a story about a baby, my baby. See, I didn't come to the priesthood in the most traditional of ways. I came later in life. I'm not that old, but I came later in life. But I also was married. At the age of 29, I was married to a woman named Martha, and when we found out that we were having a child, when we're bringing a new life into the world, we were over the top with joy, like many young couples. We were so excited that we had the crib assembled and the nursery decorated, which was really just a small room in our tiny little Los Angeles apartment. But we had it all decorated and the crib all assembled 8 months before the due date. To say that we were excited would be the understatement of the century. And like many young couples, we decided we were going to go 100% natural, you know, no pain medications, which was easy for me to agree to. No pain medications. It would be, you know, 100% vegan, organic, GMO and gluten-free, paleo, whatever. Like, it was going to be all natural. Until, that is, that little baby just didn't want to come out into the world. And we were way over the due date, and the doctors said we have to induce labor. And after 12 excruciating hours of labor, which was not made any better by me stupidly saying, just breathe like we talked about. Guys, don't ever do that. Anyway, after 12 hours of excruciating labor, we called for the anesthesiologist. And soon thereafter, Megan, our daughter, was born on April 16th. But when she came out, something was wrong. She was quiet. She wasn't crying. She didn't move. She was blue. And I thought my life was over. The nurses and the doctors whisked her away to the other side of the room. And they started working on her and suctioning her. It was the longest 60 seconds of my life. And then all of a sudden, she started crying. And she got pink. And she was moving around, and the doctors and nurses were calm again. And I know many of you have had this same experience, but when I held that little girl in my arms for the first time, I knew that I would love her and protect her and support her no matter what. No matter what. It was also a turning point in my faith, because as I looked at her tiny little beautiful body, the elegance with which God created this miniature human, there was no way I could believe that this was a random occurrence in an otherwise meaningless universe. This was a beloved child of God, created and loved by God. And I just didn't doubt. God existed. In that moment, I knew God existed. But if you were to ask me why I do sometimes doubt, I would probably tell you another story. A story about a child's heart that was broken. A child who had her heart broken. My child. It wasn't the result of some terrible betrayal or unfaithfulness or awful thing that sometimes happens. It was just a slow, steady decline. And so after years and years, and years actually, of counseling, we knew we couldn't make the marriage work. The day we told our daughter Megan about the divorce was the worst day of my life currently on record. She didn't cry. I could have handled that. She didn't get mad. I could have handled that. She didn't blame us. I could have handled that. After receiving the news, she simply asked calmly if she could go out and play by herself, as if somehow playing would make everything normal again. I knew her heart was broken. It was the worst day of my life. But I can't really blame God for that, right? I mean, it's not God's fault that two grown adults couldn't figure out a way to get along. And yet, I sometimes wonder why an all-powerful, all-loving God couldn't have spared that innocent child such pain. Or why, for that matter, God doesn't spare good and innocent people from 1,000 different kinds of tragedies and suffering that happens in this life. We live, we believe, and we doubt. It's part of the human condition. But at some point, we have to make a choice. In the 17th century, there was a scientist and a mathematician. His name was Blaise Pascal, and he was obsessed with gambling, which sounds weird and bad, but actually, in those days, the aristocratic class loved to gamble. And so when it came to faith, Pascal said that faith is very much like gambling. It's like a wager. It's like making a wager on the existence of God. It's not a philosophical question. It's a life question. And the clock is ticking. We must choose whether to seek God or remain in doubt. Neutrality is not an option, because choosing not to choose is a choice. And your wager began when you were born. And the way you choose to live your life amounts to a spiritual bet. If it turns out that God does not exist, those who believe just lose a life that was spent trying to love God and other people and do right and do justice and care about people. But if God does exist, those who choose not to believe, well, they lose everything. It's called Pascal's wager, and it applies to each one of us. In reality, we all have two choices. You can choose to believe the atheist platform that we are a meaningless and random collection of atoms brought together for no particular purpose in a universe that somehow created itself and will one day burn out, and nothing you do in this life will ever make a bit of difference, whether you loved your children or hurt them, whether you tried your best or were lazy, whether you made life better for someone else or you remained indifferent and uncaring. Ultimately, it doesn't matter. Because as the 19th century atheist Bertrand Russell wrote, all the labors of the ages, all the devotion, all the inspiration, all the noonday brightness of human genius are destined to extinction in the vast death of the solar system. And the whole temple of man's achievement must inevitably be burned beneath the debris of a universe in ruins. Or you can choose to believe that you are the magnificent product of a good and loving creator who made you in his image and gave you amazing gifts like free will and consciousness and intellect and the ability to choose good over evil, the capacity to love, and the dignity of possessing a unique purpose in this life that matters and will ultimately make a difference in the universe. And that you will not only survive death, but you will one day know, in the most perfect way, the glory of God. Which to believe is your choice. And you have until the cosmic roulette wheel stops spinning for the last time to place your bets. With the way this world is, we are all wounded and we all doubt. Maybe not doubt the whole thing. Maybe there's parts of your faith that you question or parts of the teachings of the church that you question. But we all are wounded and we all doubt. In a world where wars are declared and fortunes are lost and careers are destroyed and where hate incites violence and people get sick and die and little girls' hearts are broken, it's no wonder we doubt sometimes. The Holocaust survivor and Nobel Peace Prize winner Elie Wiesel once responded to a question about his faith. Listen to what he said. He said, "My tradition teaches that no heart is as whole as a broken heart. And I would say that no faith is as solid as a wounded faith." This is a picture of my daughter today. It was taken when we went to Disneyland together this past Christmas, just a few months ago. She loves Disneyland like I do. And I feel compelled to tell you that when I look into her smiling face today and wonder over the marvelous future I believe God has in store for her, a life of meaning, a life of love, a life of goodness, despite the pain, my faith is confirmed and restored. Easter is a season of faith. It's also a season of doubt. And a great, unique opportunity to ask yourself some hard questions about what you actually believe. And so I invite you to do two things. First, commit to watching all four of the episodes of this series on doubt. If you can't be here on Sunday for some reason, you can find them on our website, sthillary.org, on the watch page. Second, consider joining one of our small groups forming right now. It's called Alpha. Alpha is something that, an experience that millions of people around the world have taken and have embarked on. It's a safe place to talk about doubt. If you do have doubts, if you do wonder about certain teachings or the whole thing, you can join that group and it'll be a safe place to talk about it. We'll have more information about that at the end of Mass. You know, it took time for the apostles to come to full Easter faith. They had to work through their doubt, but faith won out in the end, and the world was changed forever. Take this time to face your doubts honestly, and when you come out on the other side, you will experience true Easter joy.